Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with a rejection.
Hello and welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Almighty Balling Network. My name's Carter Rodriguez. Justin Rowan, our normal co-host, isn't here because he doesn't work inhuman hours. In his place, I've got 120 Sports host extraordinaire Tyler Jacobs. You just got done doing 5 hours of live television, so what's 30 more minutes of not live podcasting?
Well, for those out there that are fans of the Chase Down that don't know me, they will soon figure out I will gladly spend as much time after my workday talking about the exemplary performance of one LeBron James. So you're lucky you caught me on a good day with his performance in Game 2, Carter.
Yeah, it feels really good to know that there's going to be someone on this pod for once that likes LeBron more than Justin and I. And it's not a healthy thing that you've got going
no,
there.
No, it's certainly not.
But the Cavs, I mean, they absolutely wrecked the Raptors in this one. It's looking like it's not going to be a series. Cavs take a 125-103 win. The Cavs hit their first 8 threes. I mean, there's just nothing you can do when their shooters are hitting like that, right?
No, there's not. They have built a roster, to me, seemingly, Carter, to try and mimic what they've seen from, I don't want to say, of course, with Daryl Morey in Houston, it's advanced analytics. We're taking threes, we're getting to the free throw line, or we're taking bunnies. The Cavs don't operate exactly like that. And obviously with the Golden State Warriors, they have the best shooting backcourt, maybe the greatest shooting team of all time now with Kevin Durant in the fold from downtown. They live and die by the three. I think LeBron and David Griffin and Ty Lue have seen the way that these teams have been constructed and how efficient they can be, how ruthlessly efficient they can be, and that's what the Cavs ideally want. That's why they bring in Channing Frye. That's why they go get a Deron Williams. They put shooters around LeBron James, and that's not a new concept for LeBron. He's been doing that ever since his time in Miami, but now it is a full-on space the floor for me, I'll get in the lane, do my thing, or kick out to you guys for three. And what's good for Cavs fans and for Ty Lue and LeBron, Channing Frye all of a sudden has found his three. J.R. Smith has all of a sudden found his three. Even Iman Shumpert's hitting corner threes. They're getting decent contribution from Deron Williams off the bench now. Kevin Love is hitting his threes and has found his rhythm with this team after the past couple of years in the playoffs, especially year one, didn't really know how to fit in. They're operating at a maximum efficiency, a max Q, so to speak, a terminal velocity, and that is scary for the rest of the East and whoever they come up against in the NBA Finals. Yes, I don't want to jinx it, but they're going to the NBA Finals again.
You heard it here first, folks. Actually, not first. Everyone's saying that. But yeah, I think what's interesting is you did mention Morey Ball, right? And that it's threes, it's free throws, it's getting to the lane. But what the Cavs do have that the Rockets don't have is they have guys who are willing to pull from that mid-range, that are willing to take some tough contested shots when the defense starts taking things away. I mean, you saw in Game 1, the Rockets scored every single point either from three, at the free throw line, or in the paint. But
I bet Daryl Morey went home with that shot sheet last night and spent a good few moments in the bathroom with it.
I think Joe Lacob did with him, yes, with Larry O'Brien.
Oh, my God. I think he probably slept with that shot sheet last night. That was his ideal.
Daryl Morey's wife hasn't been paid attention to for weeks. It's just him and his freaking charts. Damn it, Daryl. You don't even love me.
Sorry, honey. I'm in the bathroom. Leave me alone.
But, like, the Cavs have that ability, too, when, you know, because the Warriors are going to take away those kind of shots.
Sure.
They're better at switching off the ball than anyone. But the Cavs do have Kyrie, who is one of the best mid-range merchants in the game. You got LeBron, who can kind of create that in-between shot,
right?
Can find shooters, can find guys cutting through. You got Love, who's a good mid-range and post-up player. So the Cavs do have that versatility that really, really goes a long way. But let's move over to the other side of the ball. DeMar DeRozan scores 8 points, if that. Five points.
5 points in game two.
Gets only three free throw attempts, and the Cavs are just blitzing the shit out of him. And Lowry. I mean, every one of those pick and rolls, they are the two defenders are just collapsing on the point guard. They're not giving them any out. They're making Patrick Patterson, they're making Jonas Valanciunas, and they're making Serge Ibaka create, and those guys are just not proven capable of operating out of that short role.
No, they aren't. And when Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan aren't basically going to combine against a Cleveland Cavalier team, against other teams they may be able to get away with this, but against a Cleveland Cavalier team, if they're not going to combine for basically at least 50 to 55 points a game, there is no chance. And right now, Ty Lue has drawn up a defensive game plan for these two that is perfect. DeMar DeRozan doesn't have a three-point shot. He wants to get close to the basket, and I think the Cavaliers are fine with kind of packing that mid-range area, trapping him when he comes off of his screens, and saying, "Go," saying either take that three, or if you come in this lane, it's going to be very difficult for you to try and get to the line where DeRozan, I think, was third in the league this year in free throw attempts or free throw makes.
He averaged 8.7. So, I mean, he's not getting
there. He's not getting there, and that's a credit to the defense the Cavaliers are playing. I think Kyle—
And a credit to J.R. Smith, who is not the most disciplined guy traditionally, and neither is Iman Shumpert for that matter. And these guys are hands up, hands wide. They're not reaching in. They're not playing the kind of game that DeMar wants them to play.
Everyone has talked about the Cavaliers flipping the switch in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And this is it. We are seeing the manifestation of an engaged J.R. Smith, an engaged Iman Shumpert. Everyone on that defensive end is engaged. So for those that thought it's a dangerous game you're playing, LeBron and the Cavs flipping that switch, their defensive rating was wretched at the end of the season. I don't know what it is in this postseason, how it compares, but the eyeball test tells me that there is far more engagement, far more communication, and far better team defense from the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I hate to say it, but I'm not surprised. This is what they live for. After winning it all last year, this is what JR and Iman and everyone is going to live for. The regular season means not. When it gets to the postseason, we'll flip that switch. We'll turn up the intensity on defense, and the Cavs are doing it right before our very eyes.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the defensive ratings in that Pacers series, they weren't great because they weren't trying. Still, in the first half, they weren't putting together good efforts. But in the second half, they ratcheted up. They got that defensive rating up around 97, 98, right, kind of into that elite range. And, I mean, Ty Lue, if he's good at anything as a coach and as a game planner, it's, you know, he gets a lot of credit for the rah-rah stuff, the getting guys to buy in stuff. And, you know, Justin and I have complained a lot about how that's all he really gets credit for. Because this guy's a great game planning coach. And when you have a strength, he'll take it away. And if you have a weakness, he exploits the hell out of you.
There's a reason why this guy was a coveted coach. He's a smart basketball player. He's learned under some of the better minds in the NBA. Of course, playing under Phil Jackson in Los Angeles, just to name one, most notably. He's picked the brain of Kobe Bryant playing with Kobe in Los Angeles, and obviously getting to work with LeBron James, who is a basketball savant, getting to pick his brain. And he applies all that very well. He is not a coach who looks at himself as someone who has all the answers, and that's what I think I respect most about Ty Lue. He's willing to listen, admit what he has, his strengths are, his weaknesses are, and try and use others that have those strengths that may fit his weaknesses to make his team better. As much as it sucked for David Blatt to get
sure did
kicked out of Cleveland the way he did, I think the proof is in the pudding at this point that the Cleveland Cavaliers, David Griffin, and owner Dan Snyder made the right choice in going with Ty Lue.
Yeah, I mean, but it's got to be said, one, LeBron Ramon James makes the job a little
okay,
easier.
Correct. I mean, absolutely.
Is he playing?
Absolutely.
Obviously, so the games 5, 6, and 7 of the finals,
right,
probably the best we're ever going to see him play. But in terms of a consistent run, we're now 6 games in. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been damn near perfect.
I had a hot take tonight on the rally on 120 Sports.
Oh,
Carter.
Nice plug.
And my hot take was this. Let's imagine a scale from 0 to 100. And 100 is the max level that a human being can achieve playing basketball. It's like terminal velocity. When you're falling down to Earth, you can only reach a certain speed. You cannot go any faster.
Sure.
Okay, so LeBron James right now is at 100. He is playing perfect, flawless, terminal velocity, max Q basketball. He's not the first to do this in the history of the NBA. Michael Jordan certainly has, Kobe at times, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. But right now, LeBron James, and I think it goes back to the finals in which they lost against the Golden State Warriors, where he wasn't as efficient as he normally is, but he imposed his will. The fact that they won two games and had a 2-1 series lead against the Golden State Warriors is almost to be more remarkable without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving as the win in games 5, 6, and 7 last year against that 70, almost as remarkable. But then you couple that with what he did in last year's finals against the greatest single-season team in the history of the NBA. Sorry, Bulls fans, MJ, but that was the greatest, objectively, with 73 wins. And then to see what he's doing right now, Carter, he's not even breaking a sweat.
It's crazy because we thought we were going to start to see him. I mean, I remember two years ago, his first half season back in Cleveland, he had that back issue. He wasn't quite as explosive. The jump shot had kind of abandoned him. I remember, obviously you put together, especially as a Cavs fan and as a Cavs blogger, you put together this brave face. But, privately you're starting to say, oh, no, is this no. where it starts? Is this where you start going down the mountain that you had spent so long climbing? And he's just completely put a stop to that. And maybe it's a few little trips to Miami that have helped. But still, I mean, it's been unbelievable. And the sheer blatant disrespect.
It's beautiful.
For the Raptors in this series. Let's run through the timeline. Okay. So, a minute into the first game of the Eastern Conference semifinals, ostensibly against the team with the best point differential in the East, a team that took two games against you last year, they get a steal. He's in transition with Kyrie. And he points up, put it up off the backboard.
Throw it off the damn glass, Kyrie.
Put it up for me. Then, later in the game, once it's well in hand, he jokingly pretends to drink a beer.
Missed a bunny. He was upset. He got fouled, missed a bunny. He powered through contact and missed a bunny. So, of course, damn it, I need a drink after that.
It's not surprising that he's a wine guy, though, right?
No, it's not surprising.
I don't think...
He's got sophisticated palate and taste.
He's got a sophisticated palate and taste because I think that matters to him.
Yeah, I do.
And two, I do think that LeBron is the kind of guy who, when he first started going to parties, they were offering him, natty lights, the Busch lights. Uh-huh. And he says, give me that Smirnoff Ice. Give me the wine coolers.
Well,
I think he started, LeBron James started drinking on wine coolers.
I hope so, because I started drinking on wine coolers and Smirnoff Ice.
It's like that. Beers were so gross.
Disgusting when I was, I won't say how old, 14.
Oh, geez. This is now a cautionary tale.
Stealing beers out of my parents' garage or out of the refrigerator, or going into other people's homes without permission and stealing beers out of their refrigerators. Sure. A little garage shopping through the neighborhood. We'd pull out the beers and we didn't like those. So we would try and get people to buy us Smirnoff Ices. And then you obviously drink a lot of those and it's just so sugary and you throw up after it.
First vomit
throw up all the McDonald's that you ate. And it's
first
disgusting.
Vomit was the six pack of Smirnoff Ice. And that's when I realized maybe this isn't such a good idea. But we're getting off topic. So LeBron, wine drinker LeBron, pretends to drink the beer, but of course he would never drink it because it's beer.
It's also a beer that
Great
talks some shit to him.
Great Lakes.
When he left Cleveland the first time, they kind of,
they had a Quitness.
A Quitness beer, that's what it was.
It was called Quitness.
So I think he recognized the label, and that's why he gave it that stank face and put it back down.
Yeah. Actually, I just think it was an empty. That's actually my big theory.
I think the woman was carrying off an empty.
Because it was already open.
Right.
So I think it was an empty. But regardless, it was the Great Lakes, so he had to get that digging after because LeBron might forget, but he never forgets.
He does not.
Yeah, I guarantee you if I ever meet LeBron and I'm like, oh, man, big fan, been writing about you for years, he's going to say, I saw what you were tweeting when you were 15.
Right.
I saw what you were saying.
When you didn't believe.
You asshole.
When you didn't believe.
You fickle asshole. I know you fist pumped when you read that Dan Gilbert letter. But I was a kid. It's not my fault. I was working at Dairy Queen. So he does the beer incident. Then after the game, he refers to the game as rhythm and conditioning. And then tonight, he's getting ready to shoot. He's got Ibaka ice out on him, flips the ball around in his hands a couple times till he gets those laces just
right. It's like he was shooting a free throw.
Yeah, it was the most nonchalant three-point attempt I've ever seen that wasn't taken by Zach Randolph in a Knicks uniform.
God, he played for the Knicks.
That was the best era of
Classic
Zach Randolph's
Tebow.
Career. So, I mean, he couldn't have less respect for this team, right?
Carter, like I said, when you're in God mode, and right now LeBron is in God mode. He has reached the apex of basketball skill that is humanly possible. Okay, so the game is too easy for him right now, especially against this competition. Now, God mode is going to be needed in full effect when he gets to the NBA Finals against whoever comes out of that West, because nonchalantly shooting the basketball against the Golden State Warriors, not going to get LeBron another ring.
Not fun party time.
No. That is not. He realizes that. So he knows right now he can enjoy the rhythm and conditioning, the tune-up, the build-up, till he gets to that NBA Finals. But, I mean, what else would you do if you were playing at this level that LeBron is playing at?
Gosh, it's got to be so demoralizing for the Raptors right now. And, like, so, I mean, to be fair, this is a team that every time they lose horribly.
Yep.
It's something in their DNA that even if they win a series, they're going to, if they go seven games, they're all three of those losses are going to be by 25 points.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to some extent, you have to be kind of hesitant to draw these huge conclusions like series over. But it kind of just feels like
this is different than last year.
Feel a little different because, one, the Cavs, I think, were annoyed that they had to play late. I think they know they have to be rested for this Warriors series that's coming.
Yep.
I'm not sure how many games the Warriors are going to lose the rest of the way. And then, I mean, you've got the fact of the matter is they're playing so well, and I think the Raptors are a little bit defeated. I think they feel deflated. I don't think they can win. And, I've seen some Raptors fans giving Dwayne Casey some heat for, you know, some lineup adjustments, like not starting P.J. Tucker and stuff like that. But, like, it goes back to, and I said this in our preview podcast with Faisal Kamisa of Sportsnet, there's no magic elixir that Dwayne Casey has in his pocket, right?
No. There's no magic elixir. There's literally nothing that any Eastern Conference coach has to stop LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, you think P.J. Tucker might be the guy to at least slow him down, but you have to account for the fact that P.J. Tucker's 4 inches shorter.
Yeah.
He's probably like 20, 30 pounds lighter.
I don't know how he got this reputation as a LeBron stopper.
It's really weird because, like, it wasn't just like, hey, they traded for a good defender when they traded for him. It was like, they got a LeBron.
They got the guy who can stop LeBron. Damari Carroll was supposed to be that guy. Listen, I love Damari Carroll. Yeah, he reps my university, yeah. Mizzou.
Tyler is Mizzou made.
And at least Carroll has the length to stay with LeBron, but he's also 40 pounds lighter than LeBron James.
And his knees don't work anymore.
And his knees don't work anymore. So if there is, and I'm not sure there is, because I remember even when the Spurs won that series against LeBron James Heat, when Kawhi Leonard was the MVP.
It's not like he did bad.
LeBron had better numbers than Kawhi. Yeah, LeBron was fine in that series. It was the help around him and the fact that the Spurs were just...
I mean, they shot like 70% from three.
They reached that max Q as a team in that series against Miami, and they kind of demoralized the rest of the Heat. But LeBron... No one stops LeBron, and I am going to throw Kawhi Leonard in that mix. Kawhi can make it more difficult,
I'm really glad you're saying this, because the only times we've ever seen LeBron be efficient was when James Jones was getting minutes in the finals.
Right.
It's the only time. It's the only time, because it just, and this is why the whole two-way player thing kind of bothers me a little bit. The Klay Thompson's the best two-way guard in the league. It doesn't matter. You can't weigh offense and defense equally, because good offense always beats good defense, because there's the shot making variable that can't be accounted for.
Right.
All you can do as a defensive player is make the offensive player's margin for error as small as possible.
Right.
But the greatest players, they
excel within that margin of error.
They take the crowbar, and they just fry the margin of error open again. So the LeBron stopper thing is a myth, I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's just, even with Kawhi, it's a myth.
There's only one LeBron stopper, and that's LeBron himself.
Yep.
It happened one time in the 2011 Finals against the Dallas Mavericks.
Also begrudgingly, against the Celtics.
Well, okay.
Walking off the court.
See, no, I take umbrage. I take umbrage to those that say LeBron struggled against the Celtics when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers the first time. The dude went in that epic Game 6 battle with Paul Pierce going toe-to-toe, and when they did lose in 09...
One of the best duels of all time.
When they did lose in 09, LeBron wasn't efficient. I get that. But he had the raw numbers. I didn't see, as others did, someone out there who was dejected and demoralized. I saw that with the Heat in the finals.
Yeah, the Mavericks.
That is the only time I've seen it. I take umbrage with those that said he you know, gave up on his team or he quit against the Celtics. No, he did not quit. He had inferior firepower against a superior team. And he had nothing else he can do but try and do his best, and it was inefficient basketball.
There was also a lot of standing in the corner with the shoulders slumped in that series. But okay. I get it. I get it. It's nitpicking one of the best legacies
right,
of all time.
Right. It's nitpicking.
And I like that. I like the idea that it really is like, it's just you're kind of at the mercy of whether his shot goes in.
Right.
That's what stops LeBron is if the jumper goes cold, if he misses some bunnies. But defensively, he's a weapon like we've never seen before. And offensively, when the jumper's going, and like just the chess he's played in this series, where, you know, because even really, really good players don't play chess like he does.
No, he's literally one of the, has to be one of the three greatest basketball minds to ever play.
Yeah, and what's kind of, it's almost nice when I go watch them live on the rare occasions I actually get to Cleveland or to Indy to like watch a game from Chicago, is that you get to see, and I always get cheap seats because I'm a poor man, but you get to see a top-down view of the floor
right.
in a way that you don't if you're watching the broadcast angle that's a little bit more, you know, a bit
right.
more of a flat angle.
Right.
And you watch, you can see the chess pieces move a little bit better.
Sure.
It's almost
sure.
like a top-down view. It's like the Madden view on camera
sure. Sure.
on as opposed to the broadcast view.
Right.
And you get to see the way that he organizes everyone in a little row like dominoes and then says, okay, now, and then just absolutely shreds them. And that's something that no one else in the Cavaliers can do. And you'll see them try to run similar sets with Kyrie or Darren. And Darren's a really good passer, but it's just this understanding of how everyone's going to move on all the other nine guys are going to move. That's just insane.
Have you've seen LeBron play in person, right?
Yes.
From like the floor? Not have you ever done it from the floor?
Never done it from the floor.
Okay, I've never done it from up there, but we know and regard LeBron as one of the greatest passers of all time.
This is Tyler humble bragging that he's been credentialed
no,
a few games.
It was a Miami Heat preseason game at the Sprint Center in Kansas City. It was not like a real basketball game.
Okay.
But the thing that I marveled at most when watching LeBron James up close and personal was not his speed, was not his power, was not his size, was not his dunking ability. It was the pace and velocity on his passes. No one else on the floor can throw passes that LeBron James can throw. End of story, period.
I can't believe anyone ever catches them.
And the fact that LeBron has the mental capacity to set up this chess game and realize with my superior passing ability, how many times do we get sports boners, not over his dunks, but over the passes that he makes to someone in the corner with his left hand, driving baseline and throwing it around a defender with pace into the shooting pocket. He is the greatest pound-for-pound passer I think the game has ever seen.
Because of that pace.
It's because of the pace and that mental ability to understand where everyone is and be able to execute it. The pace and the velocity of his passes. Again, I don't know how some of these guys catch it. It really is marvelous that we don't see more of his passes to these guys that are wide open in the corner get dropped. But in person, it is the most marvelous and fascinating thing to see about LeBron James's game. The strength and power with which he can throw passes and throw them right on the money to his shooters. To me, when you couple that with his mental capacity to understand where everyone's going to be on the floor, that's what makes him the most deadly weapon in NBA basketball.
It kind of makes me think of when you see Aaron Rodgers like
yes.
load up a Hail Mary,
yes.
go running the opposite way,
yes.
and then just he unloads it, and it's like it just was shot out of a cannon.
Right.
I feel like it's the same way. And honestly, I only think there's one player in the NBA who comes close to making those kind of passes. I think it's John Wall.
John Wall?
Like, I'll see, he did this like reverse angle pass with his body weight going left, and he threw it right, and it was just a rocket to the opposite corner. I was like, oh, that was a little LeBron.
I've never seen Wall in person, so I just know based on the numbers, obviously, in watching John Wall play, that he is one of the greatest passers in the NBA. Got to be top, you know, 3-5 at the worst. But I'm starting to love Nikola Jokic. I don't know if he throws it with the velocity, yeah. but the touch.
Little.
No one has. LeBron doesn't even have the feathery touch that Jokic does from that.
Yeah. Well,
he's throwing it from 7 feet. He's
yeah.
throwing it from 7.5 feet, so he can create angles in a way. LeBron creates angles around people and over people at times, but Jokic is literally operating from over the top of you and to have the feathery touch. I can't wait to see this guy continue to develop.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to watch a guy like Jokic develop, and he kind of reminds me of like Marc Gasol on those best Grizzlies teams because he used to find those cutters
yeah.
unbelievably well. But let's get back to the series.
Okay.
Are the Raptors going to win a game in the series?
I don't believe so. I think you spoke to it. They're demoralized. Yeah. They have to be. Your best player scored 5 points in game two. He's being taken out of the series altogether, and he's not someone who can affect the game in other ways, setting up his teammates. He's not a distributor of the basketball. He'll get assists, but he's not a natural-born playmaker.
Yeah, and that's why those traps are brutal with him, because he doesn't find that leak out. Like, when Steph Curry gets trapped, and of course he's going to draw a little bit more attention and a little bit more panic, but when Steph Curry gets trapped, he gets that leak out past the little release valve faster. And he gets to, and of course Draymond Green's the one catching it, but he gets it out there a little bit quicker. It feels like by the time DeRozan will kind of lob it over,
right?
And by that time, everyone's already scrambling and getting back. So I just don't think that he's got the juice. And Lowry's having like good games, I guess. Like he's getting 20 points, but like six assists.
Is he hurt now? Is he compromised physically?
Yeah, but even so, I don't think that he's having particularly impactful games.
Sure,
I think like we went into the series like knowing that obviously LeBron's going to be the best player on the floor, but if the Raptors want a chance, DeRozan and Lowry have to be like the second and third by a lot.
Sure.
And it hasn't really...
No.
And that's even with Kyrie and Love not playing great. Not playing bad, but not playing great.
And you say Kyrie is not playing great, and I understand based on the eye test, but 20... points, 10 plus assists for the first time in back-to-back games in his NBA career.
He's making up for the shooting really well by being a great facilitator. I just meant not playing.
Like we saw in the finals. Not game 7 of the finals, and when he was helping LeBron win last year, he was playing at a superb level. To fathom a game script where the Cleveland Cavaliers lose in game 3 or 4 against the Toronto Raptors, the only thing I can come up with is they shoot less than 25% on like 35 to 40 attempts from downtown.
And that's it. Stop being disciplined on defense.
Sure, sure.
They fall into some bad habits. Yeah, they fall into some bad habits and they let DeRozan go off for 30.
I don't see them doing that. Now,
and this team doesn't, and I would think I was talking to Justin, my co-host, about this after game one. I don't know if there's a Bismack Biyombo that like starts changing the series with his physicality like last year.
Oh.
Like, I mean, Biyombo was grabbing like 20 rebounds.
As much as Serge Ibaka is known as a shot blocker, and he is by the numbers, he's not a physical shot blocker. He's a finesse player. This guy is not down low banging, not exerting his physicality the way a Biyombo would, because that's all Biyombo has. Biyombo has no skill. So I have to use my body and my strength and make my opponent feel me. Ibaka...
You got
to
send Dante Jones and just whack him in the balls.
Whack him a little bit. And LeBron will pay the fine for that.
Of course.
For Dante, for his hitman.
I just don't think that the only guy who's on this Raptors team that can really ugly it up is PJ Tucker, and he's throwing rocks against a mountain hoping to make a dent.
Because
the guy who's trying to ugly it up with is LeBron, who's just stronger than him.
Bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah, I picked a sweep going into the series, and I kind of got some heat, like, oh, Cavs fans are getting cocky, but I just thought, you know, and I thought there was a world in which this went six if the Cavs weren't super focused or crisp defensively, but it seems like they're as locked in as they've been all season. I think this is the best they've played all year. Tristan's playing the best he's played all year. As you mentioned, I think you mentioned this earlier, and it's important. These role players are playing well. JR has had the year from hell, getting hurt, hold out. He's had family problems, unfortunately. Channing Frye, similar things with his family, and they've both slumped at different times. Love's had that knee surgery. He's had some back issues. That jumper's been come and gone. Iman Shumpert was benched the first couple games of the playoffs because he'd been so brutal. And all these guys are playing well right now. And you can't beat the Cavs unless you have a Warriors-level talent. If LeBron's playing the way he's playing, putting together these virtuoso performances, and the role players are all doing their jobs.
And in retrospect, hindsight is 2020, but let's go back to those times when the Cavs were struggling, to sub-500 records, in the month of March?
And January.
When you're going through some of the things that we've learned about now, those role players were going through off the floor, is prioritizing regular season NBA games the top of your list? I would guess no.
No, you got family stuff that's taking you down. I mean, Channing Frye in his Players Tribune article was talking about choking back tears on the court, like lost both of his parents in like a month. Like it's stuff that you don't account for until someone reminds you, and then you go, oh, Yeah, that's what's happening.
And now there's something tangible to focus your energy on instead of, I just have to get through the slog of the regular season.
It's the difference between going into work and you're working towards something.
Exactly. And during the regular season, because of the human element, I don't think the Cavs had something to work towards. Yeah. They kind of tried to work towards a one seed, but we all know it doesn't freaking matter if they have the one seed or not in the Eastern Conference. So they weren't ever really able to find the motivation there. But now the real carrot's at the end of the stick. And regardless of what is going on with these players in their personal lives, professional athletes, when they have something that clearly motivates them the way a championship trophy can, that is clearly tangible, if you know you're going to apply yourself, I think you're able to better focus in and block out some of those things for 48 minutes that could hamper your performance during a regular season game. So,
yeah, plus
in hindsight,
plus
they're rested. And they are. They're going to be rested.
This team is old as shit.
Darren Williams, though, looks great. And LeBron's made him lose 10 pounds.
Yeah, the 10 pounds.
Right.
Yeah, I said this on the last podcast, but when they signed him, my friend Cameron, who was not a big fan of Darren, he just looks like the kind of guy who always has, like, Dorito dust on his fingers.
Not anymore. Yeah. I mean, LeBron's watching over him like a hawk, making sure he gets on that tread climber. Yeah. RJ, for his age, looks good. Channing Frye is in good shape for his age. So, yes, they are old. Carter.
They're rested, though.
But they're rested, and that's important.
And that's kind of the thing that's kind of nice about this old team is it's a bunch of older, like, former stars. Like, RJ used to be a star. Right. Darren used to be a star. Right. Kyle Korver is getting up there, but, you know, with a couple, you know, with some days
been
to get your legs
right.
Been an all-star, and one of the best shooters of all time. And, like, what's nice about veteran stars is that those guys have their little stretches, their little flashes of brilliance, where it's like, oh, that's the guy that we used to watch. And you don't get that with the Young Bucks. You don't get that with Kevon Looney. You don't get that with McCaw or
Ian Clark.
Yeah, like, those guys don't have that bank to draw on. And sure, sometimes they'll go, like, you'll see Darren go to draw on that bank sometimes, like, wait, I'm not fast anymore, and then get completely stonewalled. But when it all clicks, it looks really, really good, and it's really devastating. And I mean, I think the best example of that is Vince Carter in Memphis, who can still play, can still move, but then every now and again will, like, take over for, like, a 2 minute stretch. Never like a 20 minute stretch.
No,
but like a 2 minute stretch. So that's kind of what the Cavs have going for them.
I think LeBron loves playing with those type of players as well, because there is some semblance or reservoir of talent
of greatness,
but LeBron knows, all right, I just need it. I only need it for 2 or 3 minutes from you, Darren. I only need it for 2 or 3 minutes from you, Kyle. I'll pick up the rest, but I can't be on the floor for 48 minutes.
I mean, think about RJ in the finals last year.
It's great.
I mean, like, his numbers weren't amazing, but, like, it was just like he just suddenly became a young man again, and he was devastating for those small ball lineups, especially with Kevin Love concussed.
And more importantly, I think, than almost that reservoir of, you know, untapped greatness that is, you know, the final few drops in the gas tank. When you play with LeBron James, you have to understand the game of basketball. You have to have a basketball mind that
can
grasp. Exactly. You can't be Ricky Davis. Okay, you cannot be that. And
you can be Mario Chalmers, but you'll get yelled at a lot.
You will get yelled at a lot. You're going to be the little brother on the team. So because LeBron has such a vast and extensive knowledge of the game and understanding spatially of the game, you have to have that as well. So he, without looking, I know on this play, the way they've drawn this defense toward me, there better be someone in the corner because that's the right basketball play. I'm going to whip this ball in the corner. Oh, look, there's Kyle Korver waiting because he knows how to read a defense and get to a soft spot.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that people don't always understand, and I've talked about in the past, is that it's not just easy to play with LeBron. I think people think that, like, you just get plugged in and it's easy.
No.
But, like, he has certain expectations of everyone, and he sure as hell isn't going to compromise to make you feel comfortable.
No.
It's like, you better figure out how to work with what I need from you. So it does take some time for certain role players, but when it clicks, it's amazing. But let's wrap this up.
Okay.
We've got Celtics up 2-0 on the Wizards. I know that I thought the Wizards were going to do better in this series. And I think that you were kind of feel like the Celtics are lucky to be here.
I do.
After the Rondo injury kind of let them back in that series.
I think they should be eliminated right now if Rondo's healthy.
Which is crazy because Rajon Rondo was a tire fire all year, but then suddenly he was very important. But the Wizards bench has undoubtedly let them down. They undoubtedly looked really gassed at the end of game two, even before overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Wall played 47. Beal played 47. I think Gortat played 43. A center very rarely plays 43 minutes, even in OT. And, like, it feels like the Wizards might have blown their opportunity, because I think that the longer the series goes, the less it favors them because of their depth problems.
Right. I understand that, and they do need to get more from Bogdanović. Oubre's been okay. He's been okay, but they're going to need him to find something else, more ways to affect the game, I think, offensively, just with his athleticism, length, pester people. But unlike the Cavs-Toronto series, where Dwayne Casey can give us platitudes, oh, the series doesn't start until a road team wins.
It almost kind of sounds almost a pretty good Dwayne Casey.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do think the Wizards can go back to D.C. and win both games 3 and 4.
I do, too.
They're a great,
I'm not saying it's over.
They're a great home team. They haven't lost yet in this postseason at home. John Wall and that team, they feed off of the crowd there. I think especially when you do play at home, Carter, the old adage is, it's not your stars that perform better. It's your role players that perform better. And if you're asking for the role players to perform better, a boost from the crowd, some energy, a little extra shot of energy. I hate to use that sports cliche because I don't necessarily believe in those. But I can see Oubre, Markieff Morris.
Jason Smith. You need to steal some minutes from Jason Smith and Brandon Jennings.
Get something. Jennings would be nice to get. Because Jennings actually has
a discernible
NBA talent. You know what I'm saying? He has a discernible NBA talent. He can create a shot for himself, and although he's not the most efficient shooter, he has moments where he'll get hot, and he can create for others with his ball handling and passing ability.
That high variance kind of thing is important, though, because if it just happens to click, that's enough.
Right.
It just needs to be enough. And, like, they haven't gotten enough from anyone yet. And I was thinking, going into this playoffs, a lot of people ask, who do you think the Cavs' biggest threat is?
I say it's Washington.
Well, and I was thinking it was Washington because, one, they always seem to play better in the postseason in the last couple of years when they make it. And Wall and Beal presents no hiding place for Kyrie.
Right.
That said, I'm looking up and down their roster. I'm thinking, do they have a good defensive player? John Wall has the tools, but he hasn't been this year.
And Bradley Beal is... He's average to above average. He's certainly not spectacular defensively. He is an offensive player.
Otto looks like a 3-and-D guy that falls asleep all the time and isn't great. Markieff is more of an offensive player than a defensive player. Right. Gortat is more of an offensive player.
And even
player.
The guys that Oubre, you would say, the one guy they bring off the bench who should be, you know, someone with his length and athleticism.
Total space cadet,
but he is absolutely a space cadet. No,
They don't. And, I mean, if you're giving up, like, 50, 40, 90s, splits to the Celtics in two straight games, like,
it's not good.
Uh-oh, because that team is a joke on offense.
They're
not good.
Right.
Yeah, especially in a playoff series. I mean, you look at how the Bulls were able to make their offense look pretty pedestrian. Like, the Celtics won that game by just stopping letting the Bulls score. It wasn't that their offense figured it out. They should be able to stop the Celtics offense, but they're not, and I think it's just going to cost them, because you have to make the Celtics look pedestrian offense if you're going to beat them. And it's actually not that hard.
Scotty Brooks has to draw up something where he forces the Jay Crowders and the Avery Bradleys and the Al Horfords to be the ones that account for 50, 60 total points. It can't be Isaiah Thomas giving you 30 plus. And right now,
I guess game one he did do that, right? Like, Jay Crowder went 6 of 8 from 3.
Yeah. And so you live with that one. But in game two, there has to be a different defensive plan to get the ball out of Isaiah Thomas's hands in the pick and roll. There has to be you have to do something to get the ball. I don't know what it is. I don't know what X and O Y's you can do, but there has to be something you can do to get a 5'9" point guard to give the ball up. It can't be, because they have length. John Wall is not a small point guard.
He's
Bradley Beal is
slow. He looks tired on defense.
Well, I can imagine him being tired. I can imagine him being tired, but he's got length. Porter has length. Beal has some length. Keith even has some length. They have the length to do this, to make things difficult. Look what Jimmy Butler was doing to Isaiah Thomas in the first couple games of that series. And again, it all changed. And Thomas wasn't that great when Rondo was out. But having Rondo off him and going to guys like Jaren Grant or Isaiah Canna. Yeah, I mean, Isaiah Thomas is going to have a much easier time scoring on those guys ISO than he is Rondo. Because Rondo's still a good defender with a long wingspan who can eat up Rondo Thomas.
If you're Scotty Brooks, do you just say, screw it, we're going to give Isaiah the Steph Curry in the finals treatment, where no matter whoever our lead ball handler is, Isaiah's man is screening for him.
Yes.
Because, Wall looked exhausted at the end of that game. You know who looked pretty fresh? Isaiah. Yeah. He was moving just fine. Yeah. And they were just letting him hide.
Right.
They just said, they just had Porter or Oubre standing in the corner, and they had Thomas hiding there, and he was chilling.
And you have guys offensively that have the skill to take advantage of Isaiah Thomas.
Force that switch, beat him up. Even if you don't score every possession, he's going to get really tired.
And that's a great point because that could affect his offensive game.
And if he's not scoring, they're not scoring.
They're effed.
Yeah, they're screwed. So, yeah, I think there's some moves to make, but they have to win 3 and 4, or I think this is done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you got to win 3 and 4, but I think they can. I think they can do it.
And the Cavs would love a long series.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Going into this postseason, I thought Washington was the biggest threat, but of those two teams, what can they win against either Boston or Washington against Cleveland in a finals? Two games?
I don't know.
One game? Three games?
I mean, Justin and I have been pretty on the record that we think the Raptors are the best team of the three.
You think the Raptors are?
Yeah, sense that they've got more weapons. I mean, obviously John Wall and Bradley Beal are dangerous, but then you have that defensive issue. Like, the Raptors are a more complete team.
Sure.
And do a lot more different things.
Sure.
They have a little bit more versatility, a few more bodies. Like, who the hell are the Wizards going to throw at LeBron James?
Again, no one stops him. But
yeah, but you can at least make it a little better.
I like Otto Porter and Jay Crowder to defend LeBron better than
I don't.
PJ Tucker, Damari Carroll, Paul George obviously can defend LeBron.
I like Jay Crowder more than PJ Tucker because he's bigger.
Yeah,
but I just don't think that the Wizards have the defense. I don't think the Celtics have the offense. So, I mean, honestly, if it comes down to it, I think I'm going to pick 4 or 5.
4 or 5. I think the Wizards can get 2. I think Boston would get 1 at the most.
Yeah, I mean, I've asked this question to a couple people, and we were talking about it even the production meeting before, while you were on air. If I set the over-under at 2.5 combined losses for the Wizards and Cavs until the finals, what would you say?
I said the over because I do think the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals can take 2 L's, and I can see
the Cavs taking at least one.
Or vice versa. I think I can see the Cavs taking 2 L's against Washington and the Warriors taking at least 1 against a San Antonio or a Houston. I think 3 losses is reasonable, but anything more than that is
Give me the
crazy.
Under.
Give me the under.
I think they might lose 2. I think it's very possible that we see 1 loss between those two teams the rest of the way. I just think they're too good. And I think it's all... I mean, the results of this bet are a prisoner of the Cavs' focus, which is a dangerous thing to be beholden to. But that's why we're not actually betting money on
it.
That's about all the time we got. It is 1:50 a.m. You have been on air for far too long, so I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming on, Tyler. I really appreciate it. If you love the pod, please subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review. Tell us to stop giving LeBron so much love, why you leave a 5-star. And of course, you know, any love you share on social media, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening, guys, and go Cavs.